So my first question is, what are the most common challenges healthcare facilities face in ensuring proper SHARPS safety protocols?
So I believe the most common challenges are cost, because everybody's got to have a budget and everybody's looking at that bottom line, and then compliance. We're trying to keep people safe, but you have to look at both of those instances. And I think part of the problem can be sometimes is that facilities, they don't even realize that there's even an issue with SHARP safety. And that then becomes difficult for organizations to even help, because they don't feel that they even have an issue. They'll tell you that we don't have a problem with SHARPS injuries at our hospital, and that's pretty much the common theme. And that is now starting to change some when we go into these institutions to give education about SHARP safety, because that's one of my first questions when I'm presenting, is having everyone raise their hand for who has ever had a SHARPS injury before. And all of them are speaking up now directly because they're wanting a safer work environment, because they've just gone too long having this risk for themselves. And I think the other part of the reason is because statistically, 50% of SHARPS injuries, they're not even getting reported. And so there's always these staff that feel like it's going to be their fault, that they got the injury and they're ashamed to report it. And that can be significant, because this again leads to the unawareness of everybody even having an issue. So then they're not implementing these proper methods to make sure that they're keeping their staff safer. If they do look at implementation at those safety preventions, then sometimes they're only considering those startup costs, and they're not really looking at all the additional costs or the hidden costs that can happen when that staff person has the injury. And so now with the presentation for SHARP safety, we're again, they're speaking up, they're feeling more comfortable, and now they're advocating for themselves as healthcare workers. And because we've always done it for our patients, and that's what we've been driven to do. We're advocating for patients, but now we want to do that for ourselves. And I think infection control can be the additional advocate for these staff, because you guys are behind the scenes. You can help encourage organizations for better safety measures and helping them monitor injuries and encouraging staff to report these injuries, because that's also really important, because we need that data to support the changes. Again, those costs of things, so they don't understand that even though a staff person may be get injured, there's different management that has to be involved with all the blood testing, and if they got an injury, is there surgery and rehabilitation involved? Are they at risk for an infection? And then they have indirect costs that they're potentially going to see with fines and compliance issues, lawsuits, workers' compensation, insurance things. Now you're down staffing, so now you don't have your staff, and you have issues with scheduling and keeping your OR schedule moving. And then you've got potential patient outcomes that are impacted if they get exposed while that injury is occurring on both sides. So it encompasses quite a lot. And staff also may feel like they don't need to make any changes for SHARP safety. So this is the compliance part, because they don't even realize there's any method, extra methods out there to help them, because they've done it this way forever. They were taught this way. And sometimes this is what we're trying to help get out there, is that OSHA has been saying this for years, but now in the last 2023, they actually came out with some clarifying statements that they need to be implementing engineering control devices. And there are things out there that are designed to help with these things, especially for the OR environment with scalpel blades and things like that. Because again, that's not something that's been addressed for a number of years. They've tried to implement like the disposable scalpels, but doctors hate those. So we always have to use the reusable, and we've always done the same methods of taking the dirty blades off with needle drivers. But OSHA specifically made this statement that that's not a safe practice, and I don't think anybody knows. And so we're trying to make sure that staff are aware of the changes from OSHA and giving them this opportunity to have a safer option with these single-handed scalpel blade removers and engineering devices that are out there.
So there's a tool to take them off.
Yes.
Is that Can you describe it to me? Because it's not something I don't think I've ever seen.
Right. And it's been out for a number of years. And that's where Mr. Sennett, he was actually one of the original designers with an emergency room physician. And so they worked closely together to design something that was safer for staff to use. So it's single-handed. So when you're removing the blade, it goes into a device and then it removes it without anyone touching it physically. It compacts it for you. They have one that's non-sterile that's used in a lot of clinic environments or even ORs off the sterile field. And then they've incorporated some that are sterile on the field. And it's just a small device that can easily be used on the back table sterilely. And we just put the scalpel blade in it with one hand and it's single handed and you just pull it right back out and it takes care of it without extra potential for having your other hand there to get the injury. So again, it's been around a long time and it's all over the world. That's the wonderful thing. It's already out there, but the states have just not taken it on as much for some reason. I'm not sure why. We only have, I think they've said 3,300 hospitals that have this. There's just not that many. And so I don't, ARN has, and AST have both recommended this type of device. And that's kind of in the education that we're providing, that it's coming from professional organizations to have these types of devices implemented. And so again, it's just making sure that they know that they're available.
That's interesting. Can you share some specific strategies or best practices that have been proven effective in reducing needle stick injuries among healthcare staff?
I think a big one is an easy one, but sometimes for some reason is very difficult, is communication. So communication is just a critical component of everything we do, and it just helps reduce the risk of those injuries by minimizing our distractions. And sometimes we rush things and that can also be that extra risk. I always encourage staff to add those extra things with other sharps, like avoiding recapping syringes and on your needles. And then we also teach them how to do a hands-free passing technique with a neutral zone. And so when you're incorporating these types of methods with, again, these other engineered devices, that can help reduce a significant amount of injuries when you're working with both types of methods. We've had, again, a lot of these things that have already been out there available to us. There's those syringes that have the external barrel on them that it flips with a, you know, just a flick of the finger to cover that barrel, and then the sheath to cover the scalpels. But again, those things are potentially things that can be removed. And so sometimes surgeons just take those off and they don't want to mess with them. And so then they're not really helping the situation. There's options to substitute for other types of devices to reduce the sharps injuries. So they've done that a lot over the years, including needle-free intravenous access systems. We have that now that we are reducing those needles. Blunt tip suture needles, we use those when it's possible. And of course, we've always had PPE, our professional protective equipment. That's probably the most universally identified way that we keep our staff safe. But honestly, it's almost actually the least effective. That's always another thing that I ask, is how many of us were double gloved when we got our injuries? And a lot of us say that we were, you know, but it's helpful that we try, protective footwear, we try. And then the PPE also helps the non-clinical folks who are not like sterile at the field, because they're exposed to the sharps too. And that's the things, it continues to move on past just the operating room suite. All of these things, if they're implementing different methods, they need to continue to review their devices on a regular basis, just to make sure that they're staying up to date with the current practices and that these devices are still effective. And I really think that if they have them, they either are not using them how they were intended or designed. They may not even be using them at all. So they were there and they had them, and then nobody really made them use it. So you have to continue with providing annual sharp safety training, always the initial training. That's got to be consistent every time with new people, because there's tons of new people that are coming in and out. So they need to know, understand how to use it, because it's pretty easy to use once they know it. But if you don't understand it, it could be awkward. So they're just going to go back to their old method. And again, these are things also that Aaron and AST recommend, is making sure that you're reevaluating. I think another method is implementing policies to make sure staff are being supported to use these safety devices appropriately and on a consistent level. And then the education is just essential. And there are a lot of new people that, again, they may not know how to use the device. So just continuing to provide that is just an important factor to keep up with.
That's a good segue into my next question, is how do you educate the staff? How do you engage them, especially new hires, in maintaining high compliance with sharp safety standards? How do you even know if they know what those standards are?
So it is just providing that initial education, giving them the awareness. A lot of them either were taught a specific way, and that may not be the best way, but it's just the way they've always known. And so, again, allowing them to have that education of what else is out there, that there are better implementations, and trying to create a change to the worker's environment is also helpful, instead of just relying on that worker to change their behaviors, because that can be a little bit more difficult. So the environment of instituting these safety engineering devices and other engineering controls, we really want to get staff feedback on this, because you want to implement something, but if staff are not going to understand it or don't appreciate it, then they may not use it. So we want them to have a voice in what they're using. So letting them see the devices, use them, and understand that they're going to be helpful in their practices every day, I think is the best way to get them engaged with it. And yes, doctors sometimes always have the say sometimes at the end when you're looking at the implementation of things, but the doctors are not the ones in surgery every day. I know people think they are, but they're not. We're the ones in the surgery every day as the healthcare providers. So we need to find the champions in those environments to encourage the consistent usage and making sure they're using it properly and following up on that engagement. And we just need to rethink how we can integrate that patient safety, the staff safety, with patient safety. Because again, our focus has always been patient safety, and we know we're not going to lose that, but we just want to branch it into providing staff safety as well. And because even just one injury to somebody in your department and who you work with, it's just one too many. And these sharp injuries just are continuing to be overlooked. And I highly encourage the staff to report it, because we have to change the culture. It needs to be a culture of safety. We have to try to change it to that. And then knowing that if they're reporting it, that there's not going to be any ill intent from that, and make sure they understand that.
Why do you think that culture is, that the healthcare workers, the perioperative nurses, anybody, why do they not want to tell anybody?
I think, again, it just comes back to that shame. I think they feel like they did something wrong, or they don't want to be the one, the only one, even though we've all been in it. the first time you report it, everybody looks at like, well, why didn't you do this? Or did you do that? And why didn't you handle it this way? When we may have done that, and it's just because the risk is always there. And it just takes that one time for it to happen. And some people don't want to speak up about it. And some people are like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that happened. I want to do everything I can in order to change that. And I've actually had, and I speak to one of my nurses, and that actually happened too. So I teach a program for new residents and nurses new to the OR that have never been in the OR before. And I teach them how to scrub. And so learning how to use sharps is a really important piece that we talk about. And I teach them how to do that. But when I teach them, I'm teaching them a proper method. But when they go out to the preceptor, they may not be getting the same things. And that's exactly what happened to this nurse. So she learned from me, and then her preceptor said, you don't need to do it that way. Let's do it like this, and used the wrong instrument and ended up slicing her finger and getting an injury and had to be out for a while. And I was really scared for her that that was going to deter her and that she wouldn't want to scrub again. And it actually really actually encouraged her to be more of an advocate again for sharp safety and helping others understand that if you don't feel comfortable, you need to speak up. And if you think that that's not the proper method, you need to say something. And so she actually became an advocate for our team and helping people understand and that communication again and that focus on the safety. So I was so proud of her to do that.
And that preceptor needed to be retaught.
Yes, right?
Wow.
But that's how they learned it. So they didn't know any different. And that's difficult because we come from all different backgrounds.
Yeah, of course. What role do engineered safety devices, you've spoken to a few, needleless systems, retractable needles, but how do they play in preventing sharps injuries? But how do you convince the surgeons not to rip them off? How do you convince people, you know, who should know better, to actually use them and make them understand that they are there to protect them?
That is the question, right? And what we have to understand is when we're dealing with all of these things that are out there, it's important to remember that not all of these devices, even though they're safety engineering devices, are equal. There are devices that I typically talk about two different categories of devices. So there's a passive safety device and an active safety device. So the passive ones are the ones where the safety feature just automatically activates. So you don't have to think about it. There's no extra action by the user. And those are those spring-loaded retractable syringes and single-handed scalpel blade removers. But then the active devices, those are going to require the user to manually activate that safety feature. And then that leaves the room for the human error. And so those examples were what we talked about before, where they can pop that sheath off. The studies have shown that these passive safety devices, those are going to offer the superior safety over the active safety devices. So we want to implement those safety mechanisms. And sometimes that variance in how that happens, it is not, it shouldn't be, it's not where it should be, because they don't, again, understand that there's other options out there. The education and the confidence and the advocacy of the staff, they are the ones that are going to have to make that change for the surgeons to not do those things. But if we eliminate those types of devices and use the better option, then that will help be able to increase that compliance.
Because they're going to come back to you and say, I've got enough on my plate. I have enough to do. I don't need to be worrying about this too. You know, get this out of my way. I've got too much to do. I'm focusing. And they're going to see it, I'm imagining, as almost as a barrier. That's not the word, but like it is a barrier to getting their work done. It's impeding them from getting.
And actually, and you're right. And that's, again, those are the doctors. But right? When we train the staff, and staff are used to dealing with all kinds of different equipment and devices and supplies, and things change constantly. They're truly amazing. And when they jump in from one thing to another and use staplers and all these things that are out there. So these devices that they've designed, they're so simple to use. And you learn it, you do it two or three times, and then that becomes muscle memory. And so it just becomes part of their normal routine. And so when you give that education to them and they understand it and repeat it, and when we do that, we allow them to play with it right in front of them. So we can watch them do it, make sure they're doing it correctly. And that, again, that education and making sure that's happening, then that just builds their confidence. And so then it just becomes part of their normal routine that this is the device I need to use. I'm going to use it. The doctor doesn't even know we use it. It's done and it's handled safely. And so that, again, is what we want to try to incorporate more.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. So in your experience, how do you handle incidents of sharps injuries, and what steps do you take personally to prevent future occurrences of that same issue?
So I think it's improving sharp safety in all of these different areas. So operating room, it doesn't stop there. It also can affect your sterile processing units. Infection prevention, again, we can all work together to help implement all of these administrative controls that are there. These measures are just going to help support higher levels of controls and making sure that these folks are working in safe systems. So we have to help write policies for the sharp safety, ensure that the compliance is going to be happening with their practices, because again, if you don't implement the policies, they may not do it. We got to still encourage the reporting and then start investigating those reports, figuring out what happened, what process needs to be reevaluated to see why the injury occurred. And being transparent about those incident reports to look at the issues, that is so useful and helpful. And learning from those issues rather than hiding them. And that's the other piece we're trying to encourage institutions to do. Because if you present these issues to the staff and let them learn from other experiences, maybe that's going to help prevent those injuries from happening in the future. And that's, again, how you can help encourage the reporting. Because if they see, oh, someone else reported, then that means I'm okay, I should report it. And again, it just becomes that normal culture of safety. And some, and we all know this, that everybody is resistant to change because that's just the way we've always done it. I don't want to do anything different. But we need to understand, and most of us will take the opportunity to support change if it's positive and it's helping. And again, I think institutions need to look at this as maybe a quality improvement project and make it a system-wide type of incorporation that can build that culture of safety for the entire facility. So in you adding all of these things together, making sure that they have the safety engineering devices in practice, have them participating in the evaluation of these devices, encouraging other staff to engage in the training. And remember, getting that person that's going to speak up and be the champion to help promote the change. And then encouraging the reporting again, to making sure they know what the problem really is. And then having leadership, you know, being comfortable with leadership, because maybe some staff have really great ideas on how to improve these safety measures because they're in it every day, and bringing that up. And then as that those changes happen, make sure it's going through the whole hospital, that they're making a good change, it's happening, we're building that culture of safety. And then I'm always going to advocate for staff to make sure that we're looking at our professional organizations. What are they saying? There's advocacy groups out there to raise awareness on safety issues. ARN has been doing this for years on smoke evacuation for operating theaters. And so this now needs to step up with sharp safety. And I think if staff understand that every little contribution matters, one piece at a time, all of this can help this healthcare arena be safer for staff as well as our patients.
Absolutely. You mentioned sterile processing, and when you were talking about the retraction and the little thing to protect, you know, to protect the blade and all of this stuff, that was the first thing I thought of, is like, how, and you may not know this answer, but how difficult is that for those, not only to not lose them between the OR and, you know, sterile processing department and back, but also how difficult are they to clean? You know, and that was, I do a lot of articles on that too. So I was just kind of curious.
So when we have, so example of the scalpel blade. So we have a reusable knife handle, scalpel blade handle, that comes up from sterile processing in a tray of sterile instruments. We will add that disposable blade to it. And then at the field after the surgery is over is when that device has to be used properly in that safety engineered device to remove it once it's been used before it goes to sterile processing. So the instrument now doesn't have that blade on there anymore. But this is the thing, is if it's not done properly and people are in a rush and maybe they've gotten some relief and someone else is coming in to clean up their case for them, they don't take that blade off. And it ends up going down with the instruments, down into sterile processing. And they are trying to quickly, again, get those instruments cleaned and the decontamination and washing them and grab it in their unit and end up getting the injury down there. So again, if we can incorporate these things happening upstairs, or I shouldn't say upstairs, some of the worlds of the sterile processing is downstairs, but in the OR environment, then that will, and again, eliminate the risk for them in sterile processing. So it actually bridges together. And so we want to help both areas.
Yeah, just one more time and place that sterile processing and the OR need to be working well together, but that is another story.
That's right.
So, do you have
and any- even pathology? I mean, pathology uses these blades too. And so that is a big piece that we educate on, is that their injuries can be just as significant because they're cutting up specimens. And they're using those same blades. So again, this is a facility bigger than just operating rooms that can be impacted by this.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for joining me today.
Yes, you're welcome.